Every day there are more ways for Americans to follow the news and more sources of opinion, too, from blogs to cable channels to talk radio. You'd think that exposure to all of those voices would make us more open-minded, but Susan Jacoby argues that the opposite is true, that despite the diversity of opinion, most of us choose to listen to pundits and speakers who echo our own beliefs. What about you? Do you get your news and opinion from a wide range of sources, including those that you might disagree with? If you subscribe to The Nation or Mother Jones, do you also read The Weekly Standard and The National Review? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. You can email us, talk@npr.org, and comment on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Susan Jacoby wrote Talking to Ourselves for The Los Angeles Times. You can find a link to that article on our blog. And she's the author of a new book called The Age of American Unreason and joins us now by phone from her home in New York. And nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here.
And in your piece, you talk about a lecture that you gave at Eastern Kentucky University. Describe the scene for us, if you would.
Yes, I was invited to lecture by a professor in the history department. And Eastern Kentucky is really in, I would say, the heart of the Bible Belt. So I was quite pleased that there were 150 people there. The response was very enthusiastic. And yet I realized, as I always do, that it was enthusiastic because nearly all of the people in the room, except for a couple of students whose professors had made them go for course credit, already agreed with me. Then when I came out of my lecture, I saw hundreds of other students lining up right around the corner for a lecture sponsored by the Campus Crusade for Christ, which is a very conservative religious organization. And one of the things they sometimes do is they counter-program secular lectures on college campuses. Well, I have to say, this was quite a blow to my ego because their speaker was a recovering pedophile who said he was recovering from pedophilia because he was born again. It really is horrible to find yourself outdrawn by a recovering pedophile. But I am sure that everybody in that lecture line, too, already agreed with the views that were being presented there. And that's the whole point. Serious conservatives tell me exactly the same happens on the lecture circuit. And this was not always true in American life. In the 19th century, for instance, when lectures were the most popular form of entertainment, people went to hear people like Aldous, like Thomas Henry Huxley, who was the great British naturalist who popularized Darwin's theory of evolution, Robert Ingersoll, who was known as the great agnostic, not because they agreed with him. America was more religious then than it is now, but because they wanted to see for themselves, hear for themselves, make up their own minds.
And as you put it in the piece, see if the devil actually had horns.
Yes.
yet, as you point out, America is, any of us who have been watching the John Adams series realizes that as intensely partisan as we are today, there have been other intensely partisan periods in American history.
Oh, of course. And, you know, I wasn't talking about, I mean, the election of 1796 was and the election of 1800 with Adams and Jefferson was one of the most polarizing elections in American history with nasty charges. But what I was talking about wasn't election tactics per se. What I was talking about was the public itself. It's impossible to compare 1796 to today, if only because the proportion of people who were literate in 1796 was much lower. But it's not impossible to compare today to 30 or 40 years ago or the 19th century. And I don't think the problem is that our politics are partisan. It's that the public doesn't take the time and trouble to educate itself about different points of view.
That the public doesn't take the time and trouble.
Yes. I'm really tired of hearing people blame the polarization of politics on the elites or on Washington, which they're all trying to get to, of course, even though they decry it, or on anything, everything and anything but themselves. Look, one of the things that's happened is, ironically, and it's really a classic illustration of the law of unintended consequences, is all of the choices on the web, all of the cable channels, really enable people to go straight to what they already agree with. I'm not saying there's no one who seeks out different news sources, but people, all of the online research about reading online and offline shows, and all of the marketing, which is niche marketing, assuming that most of the people going on these things do want to have validation for their own opinions. Well, the web makes that very easy to only look for what you already believe.
Yet, I think you raised this point also in your piece. Don't we necessarily flock to people who like opinion, our friends?
Well, yes, that's what a caller to a radio show said. Well, friends are one thing and sources of information are another, but it's not always true. I cited the example of Adams and Jefferson, who had such bitter political disagreements, and yet there's this beautiful line of Adams to Jefferson in 1815 saying, "You and I must not die, Thomas, before we have explained ourselves to each other." Hmm. And the other thing I mentioned was I can't imagine today's politicians even trying. They're part of a culture in which it's considered acceptable for the Vice President of the United States, in this case Dick Cheney, to utter an obscenity to a senator he disagrees with, Patrick Leahy, on the Senate floor. That's our discourse. I don't see Dick Cheney writing to Pat Leahy 10 years from now, "You and I must not die, sir, before we've explained ourselves to each other."
Maybe I'll invite him hunting.
That would be a mistake for Leahy to accept, I think.
Get some callers in on the conversation. Our guest is Susan Jacoby, author of The Age of American Unreason, and the author of a piece called Talking to Ourselves in the Los Angeles Times. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Megan. Megan with us from Houston in California.
Hi, how are you guys?
Very well, thank you.
I really appreciate this conversation because I listen to NPR because I don't agree with most of what I hear from you guys. And I think it's amazing because from my perspective, it gives me, it validates my beliefs. It makes me understand why I believe what I believe. And I really feel like you can't defend what you believe if you don't know what the other side believes. And I'm a really conservative Christian, and I feel like a lot of what I hear from you guys, I'm like, oh, gosh. You know, that it really empowers my position to hear, okay, I can totally see where they're coming from. I totally get why they think this, and it makes me understand what I think more by listening to a different perspective. I think it's stupid if I was sitting around listening to Christians talk all day about how right we were, we would get no new opinions, and we would get, you know, nothing new discovered. I listen a lot and go, you know what, I kind of agree with them, and that's interesting. It makes me analyze why I had my previous point of view or whatever. I just think it's wonderful to listen to news you don't agree with.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, yeah, all of the surveys show that you're fairly unusual. And I think there's another element to this. Megan, yes. A lot of people talk about that, and I think it's true that obviously you can't defend your own point of view if you don't understand the opposition.
Yeah.
But you did say something else, too. Sometimes you hear some things that make sense to you.
Yeah.
And I would say one of the reasons for that, I was just listening into this previous segment about Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed to find that there are different views on marathons. I didn't
uh-huh.
know that. I'm not an expert on that.
Yeah.
But also, I do think, in fact, that NPR, although it's thought of as liberal, does make an effort to have different points of view represented. And in fact, I think the surveys for NPR have shown that it has more diversity of listeners than a lot of the commercial networks. And I can understand that. There's something else I think is important also. Maybe one of the reasons you listen to NPR is that most of the discourse is polite on it, whether you agree with it or not. But when you listen to these shouting heads on the cable news networks, first of all, half of the time you can't hear what they're saying because they are screaming across at each other. And there's a way to hear differing opinions. There's a way of presenting it, which isn't just screaming and shouting. I think, for instance, you would probably Ann Coulter, Bill O'Reilly, some of the things on the Chris Matthews show, you can hardly hear because the decibel level is so high. And I do think, I didn't mention Dick Cheney just to slam Dick Cheney. I think that kind of talk and that kind of discourse makes it hard for us to listen to anybody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I wonder, Megan, do you think your friends do the same thing?
You know what? It's so funny. My family and my friends do not get it because I'm constantly saying, today on NPR I heard blah, 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 blah. Oh, my gosh, and you wouldn't believe. Like yesterday or the day before, there was a guy who was a homosexual and he was a bishop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to his point of view and going, I can totally see where he's coming from. And I think he's wrong. And I'd love to speak with him and question his beliefs. And I'd love him to question mine. And a lot of the people, especially a lot of my friends, just think, oh, that's ridiculous. you know, why would you...
Why waste your time?
...to engage in that? And I'm like, you know what? I think it's really fascinating to understand people and understand what they think. We're all going to have a totally different point of view. And sometimes when I listen to you guys, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I didn't think through my point of view. Maybe I just accepted it because that's what the people around me believe, or that's how I grew up, or that's what I was taught. Maybe I didn't think that through enough on my own. So I just think it's good to really come up with a set of beliefs and, you know, morals that you've really looked at both sides, and it's not just, you know, okay, that's what I was told, so that's what I believe. And I wish more people would do it, because I think it's fun to have an intellectual conversation about both sides. And maybe one side changes their mind, maybe they don't, but at least you understand the other side and you can have an intellectual conversation without being angry. It's pointless to be angry. You believe what you believe and I believe what I believe, and that's kind of that. But learn the other side. We went and saw Expelled, and I thought that was a perfect example. Talk to the other side, because they might have information that you want or that you hadn't considered before.
Megan, thanks very much for the call.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. We're talking with Susan Jacoby about her piece, Talking to Ourselves, that appeared in the Los Angeles Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Luke. Luke with us from Oklahoma.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really love your show.
Thank you.
I've been listening to a lot of 30s and 40s music recently, and what's really interesting to me about that is how it feels like the music that was popular, everyone was kind of on the same page. Like during the 30s, you know, people were talking about what it's like to be in the Depression together, and everyone has that kind of in common. And then after that was over, there's like We're in the Money, that sort of thing. And I kind of think that this idea of the media, of our listening to the media to hear what we want to say, is more of a symptom of kind of a divergence of opinion, just that doesn't have to do with media, because people make up the media. So it seems like as we've kind of become more individualistic and started to, you know, sing songs about the way that we think and express ourselves and be more independent in that way, it seems like maybe we scatter a little bit as far as our national identity goes. And it's interesting because, like, back then, like, and especially during World War II, it was us against them, so there were two sides.
I think you've got the date on We're in the Money incorrect. The song, the hope of the song preceded the actuality of the fact of being back in the money. Your point on national unity, I think Susan Jacoby is interesting.
Hello?
Yes.
I think that's a little bit of an oversimplification. For one thing, people had, in the late 1930s, people had very different views on foreign affairs. I actually mentioned this in my book. I didn't mention it in the article. But one of the things that happened in the late 1930s, much of America was very isolationist. Much of America wanted nothing to do with those quarrels going on in Europe. Franklin D. Roosevelt spent a lot of time in fireside chats trying to educate Americans about what their stake was in the future of Europe and what would happen if fascism on both sides of the ocean controlled the shipping lanes. And he had to do this because there were very powerful America First organizations led by people like Charles Lindbergh, who was a national hero, very isolationist, very pro-Hitler. We always think of history from the vantage point of the way it actually turned out. By the way, I'm paraphrasing Arthur Schlesinger. I would not want to present this as my own idea. But what we forget is what happened before and how long it took to come to a kind of consensus. And you don't come to any agreement about anything if you only listen to yourself. That article should have been titled Listening to Ourselves as much as Talking to Ourselves.
All right. Luke, thanks very much for the call. Let's go now to Joseph. Joseph with us from La Crosse in Wisconsin.
I am. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to actually echo the words of one of the previous callers and say the best way for me to find out something is to go look at sources of other people who have different viewpoints. I mean, I have a subscription to the American Spectator, but I'll go online and I'll read Mother Jones and I'll look at, you know, The Nation and see what's going on there. My political views have changed. I once had a chance to talk to Mr. Horowitz, who had heterodoxy, and as I evinced my political views to him, he decided that I couldn't really have had a subscription to his newspaper before.
But did he send your money back?
How else can we do this. I mean, I taught history and English for many years in high school, and one of the things I used to tell my students is if you had a point of view, especially a political point of view, the first thing you had to do before you could tell me what your point of view was tell me what the other guy's was.
Hmm.
So, like, when kids would come to school and they would talk about Frankenfoods and the horrors of GMOs, I'd say, okay, what are the benefits of GMOs? I said, is there any successful utilization of genetically modified foodstuffs? And I'd make them go to the chemical companies' websites and ConAgra and Archer Daniels Midland and go see what those guys had to say. And I'd make them get their propaganda on both sides. But they had to be able to tell me what the opposing viewpoint was before I would even listen to what theirs was.
Hmm.
And I just think, how can you have a constructive discussion about anything if you're not versed in what the other side has to say and where they're coming from? How will you ever be able to come to a common ground? Because the point is not to win the argument. The point is to establish common ground with an opposing point of view. And if we don't even know what that opposing point of view is, how can we possibly come to terms with it?
Joseph, I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut off your outrageous comments, actually, because we're out of time.
We don't want to hear that from you.
Thanks very much for the call, Joseph. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
And Susan Jacoby, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. This show is always a delight to be on.
Susan Jacoby, the author of The Age of American Unreason, with us by phone today from her home in New York. Tomorrow, inside Los Angeles's most dangerous export, the MS-13 gang. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.